from the guy who made Batman comics cool again, and the guy who probably make Batman movies suck again, comes a film based on a graphic novel, based on an older film, based on ancient Greek propaganda, based on a true story, 300. Before the release of the unnecessary sequel on a boat, revisit the movie that made guys everywhere feel really out of shape. Meet the Spartans, a society built on reason, sit-ups, and child abuse. Led by Leonidas, cinema's yelliest king.
This is Sparta! Spartans! The mercy! No! Freedom! Steel! Tonight! We died in hell!
Who hails from the Scottish part of Greece?
Haven't you noticed? We've been sharing our culture with you all morning.
Watch as Leonidas and his 300 closest gym buddies stand against the might of Xerxes, a hairless giant with an entire jewelry store on his face, and a voice that sounds like he's in the witness protection program.
I will erase even the memory of Sparta from the histories.
Lace up your sandals for a blend of historical truth and Zack Snyder nonsense, mixing real Greek battle formations with crazy ninja spin moves, real Spartan councils with sexy stripper oracles, and actual Persian fighting units with mutant Persian goatmen? Huh? Oil up for the most confusing thing to happen to teenage boys since calculus class. Full of homoerotic undertones like men wearing thongs, men getting speared with phallic objects, men holding hands, men holding men tenderly from behind, men letting it hang, men getting all wet in the rain, men getting all sweaty on the beach, men playing two flutes at the same time, men saying things like this.
Fine thrust.
For this.
Your Athenian rivals will kneel at your feet. You will but kneel at mine.
And a male-to-female nipple ratio of 600 to 4. Man, I haven't seen a movie this deep in the closet since Top Gun.
I am dangerous.
So get pumped for a dumb movie that's only cool because of Zack Snyder's bag of overused visual tricks. Featuring
those are awesome.
Dramatic falling stuff. Instagram filters. And super slow motion.
All right, let's start the show.
Daniel Palmer, San Antonio, Texas.
Yeah, Damon.
Stop all the downloading.
It's showtime.
This is Old School at the Movies, episode 74, for March 6, 2014. Old School at the Movies is brought to you by the Trending Topics Network. Check out some great shows like The Spanish Announce Table, The Real News, and Trending Mobile Technology. Welcome back to Old School at the Movies, your one-stop shop for all your movie-related news. I'm your host, Mr. Old School. Before we get to the panel this week, let's get into the contact information. OldSchoolMovies.net is the site where you can listen, download, and subscribe to the podcast. If you want to get in touch with us directly, OldSchoolMovies2@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at OldMovies.net. That's OldMoviesDOTnet. So without further ado, let's introduce our panel for this week. We've got our Iron Man, Mr. Heavyset.
Alonzi.
We've got Kebo Trek.
What up?
And we've got Carb.
Yo, baby, you ever had your asshole licked by a fat man in an overcoat?
Yeah.
All right, let's get into the news.
I'm Bruce Nolan for Eyewitness News. Back to you, fuckers.
Matrix rebooted? Rumor says a new trilogy is being developed. We got a full trailer for Richard Ayoade's The Double. Ralph Fiennes says James Bond 24 will start shooting this October. Warner Brothers picks up rights to Minecraft movie. We got a wrap-up of all the Razzie Award winners. And the Los Angeles Museum honors Harold Ramis with a giant State Puff Marshmallow Man. Heavyset, what would you like to discuss this week? All right, so Heavyset is unfortunately dropped. Thank you very much, Skype. Let's throw this to Kevbo Trek. What would you like to discuss this week?
So I will discuss Ralph Fiennes, not Ralph Fiennes, says James Bond 24 will start shooting this October.
I figured I'd have to botch at least one or two names during that news intro. We've already known that the next mission for James Bond will hit theaters on November 6th, 2015, but we're waiting to hear when the film might actually begin production. Now, if we can believe the new M in Daniel Craig-led section of this long-standing British spy franchise, then we finally have that information. Speaking with MTV News, Ralph Fiennes, currently... is it Fiennes?
Yeah.
Yes, it's Fiennes.
I think it's Fiennes.
Fiennes.
It sounds so much better.
God, I'm glad Ralph... I have a simple last name. Michael Kervich and Percy Shurfra.
Dude, are you taking the fucking drugs again?
I love it.
Ralph Fiennes, currently making the rounds for the Grand Budapest Hotel, says the James Bond 24 will head into production this fall. Fiennes says it's meant to be shooting in October, however, the actor adds, I haven't read a script yet, so I can't tell you much. We're assuming that the Skyfall writer John Logan is putting the final touches on this script, and casting should begin very soon. One disappointing fact is that the Oscar-nominated cinematographer Roger Deakins will not be back to lens this film, but Sam Mendes will be back to direct the next installment after a short time when it was thought that his stage productions would keep him from taking on another big screen project. Kev Botrek, let's get your thoughts on this. The director, who would you cast as a villain? I'm curious. I know you're not as big of a fan as D-Ren, but I know you're a big fan of this franchise as well. Let's get your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, Skyfall was just, it was a fantastic movie. It was my second favorite movie in 2012 after Resident Evil. And, you know, you got to give a lot of credit to Sam Mendes, because you look at how much of a disaster Quantum of Solace was, not talking financially, but as a movie, and he completely turned things around. You know, it had great dramatic moments, great action, but not over-the-top action. For the first time since probably Roger Moore, we had a memorable bad guy. So I thought he really did a great job of putting that all together, making it a Bond movie, giving it a lot of depth, but not making it like, you know, the Brosnan ones were nice, but they were, you know, they were almost, you can say, fluff. So I thought he added some depth to that. So getting him back, I think, is such a big, important thing. In terms of who I would cast as a villain, I'm going to go with someone that we'll probably be discussing a bit later and I'd put Liam Neeson as a bad guy.
Oh, nice. But I could definitely see Neeson being a very difficult foe for Craig to fight.
Yeah.
I love that casting, actually.
Yeah, and I think like he brings, like, obviously, you know, we see him now. It's funny, he's become an action star in his mid-50s, but he brings yeah, like a smartness to him, but at the same time a badassness, and I think it would just be really great to see him go against Daniel Craig. But I guess I would expect this movie to come out if it's aiming to shoot this October, we'd probably be looking at a November 2015 release, which I think it would make it, what, 12, 13, 14, 4 years since the last one? No, 3 years.
Yeah.
Three or four. Whatever. Anyway, so I think it's like, you know, you don't want it to be too long after, you know, the massive success of Skyfall, and I think that would be the perfect period.
All right, Cartman, what would you like to discuss?
Well, I'm going to piggyback off Kev Bo's article real quick.
Okay, sure.
I'd like to maybe see Cranston play a Bond villain, since we know he's not going to be Luther now, since that clusterfuck of the next Superman versus Batman movie is, they already cast it through Luther. So I'd give Cranston a shot at being a Bond bad guy.
I apologize if this is a stupid question, but they've had American villains before.
Oh, well, I mean, doesn't matter.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, they've had American villains before.
Yeah.
Okay.
Christopher Walken.
Oh, there you go.
So I'd say Bryan Cranston, or I'd actually go ethnic, and I'd like, because I've always liked him as an actor, but Idris Elba.
Yeah, I mean, and he's not going to get cast for Bond anytime soon, because Craig's pretty much going to be in there for a little while. So yeah, I could see
put him in a villain role. I think that could be interesting. And,
yeah, I like that. I like that casting.
Yeah. And now as for my article, Matrix.
It's been 11 years since The Matrix Revolution mostly disappointed us with an unsatisfying and predictable end to what began as a revolutionary sci-fi action flick. The Wachowski siblings changed the action genre, making bullet time the hot new trend, and slow motion action all the rage, and the script was original, mind-blowing, and totally worthy of the patent Keanu Reeves. Whoa. However, Warner Brothers hasn't gotten anything worthwhile in the box office in terms of the filmmaking team, with both Speed Racer and Cloud Atlas completely bombing. So, what's next? How about jacking back into The Matrix with a new trilogy? Latino Review has a new rumor saying that Andy and Lana Wachowski have already turned in early treatments and outlines to the studio for what would be a new trio of films set in the Matrix universe. Supposedly one of the early outlines was about the birth of the Matrix, but it's unclear how this new trilogy would unfold. However, the speech from the architect in The Matrix Reloaded might give us some insight. So, Carp, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. I mean, the writer of this article does make a point that Wachowski brothers have pretty much fallen on their ass. This seems to be their biggest box office gross, and it would make sense they'd want to tap into it. I think it'd be interesting to get back into it as well, because the third was a disappointment. It was very much just a shoot 'em up movie, where the first two were more of a mind fuck, which I really enjoyed. Let's get your thoughts on this.
The third one was, in the end, was like an episode of Dragon Ball Z when like Super Agent Smith was fighting Neo. I like the concept of what they're saying about the architect's speech about how there was the Matrix before him, how there's been however many Matrixes before, and there's been this many ones, and then there's this many people. So I'd like to see the take where the Neo-type character, or the one character, takes the other door and restarts everything, and Zion gets destroyed. So, I mean, we'd have a predictable ending, obviously, but, I mean, things can always change. Considering that at the end of The Matrix, people were who wanted to get out of The Matrix were slowly being let out, I think a prequel would actually work a lot better. So
I agree with that. I think the prequel would be interesting, because I remember seeing an animated film discussing the beginning of The Matrix. To see a live action thing, I think, would be a lot.
Matrix?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, where we black in the sky and all that other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, so to see that in live action, I think would be pretty cool. Anybody else want to discuss?
I guess I just want to mention more of the box office. I'll just mention it quickly. We saw the first one, it made $463 domestic. The second one made $742. And then the third was a disaster at $427. So like you guys, I think if they want to go anywhere, they have to go with a sequel. Sorry,
a prequel,
not a sequel, yeah. Just because I don't think there's anywhere left to go in the Matrix, I guess. Like, I don't know how they can make post-Keanu Reeves trilogy Matrix into more Matrix movies. So I think the best way to go is a prequel.
Heavy Set, what would you like to discuss this week?
Is there any other option you think I wouldn't go? Let's talk about Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
I figured you were going giant Stay Puft. This week, the film world lost a real legend. Harold Ramis, who passed away on Monday, had a hand in some of the greatest comedies of the last half century, including Stripes, Groundhog Day, and Caddyshack. His arguably most influential movie was the 1984 classic Ghostbusters, paired up with Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and Hurdy Hudson, who Darren has a massive heart on for. Ramis helped create a pop culture movement that will live on forever, and is the vehicle in which Los Angeles Museum is honoring the actor, writer, director's passing. The news outlet Curb Los Angeles has discovered that Peterson Automotive Museum has inflated a giant Stay Puft Marshmallow Man on the roof. It has been paired with the banner that reads, "You came, you saw, you kicked its ass. Thank you, Harold Ramis." The banner wasn't up before the photo you've seen above was taken. Before you start thinking that this is completely random, the site notes that the museum currently has the original Ghostbusters Echo 1 Cadillac on display for a limited time as part of the Hollywood Gallery. Looking at their website, other vehicles on display include the Black Beauty from Michael Gondry's Green Hornet and the Batmobile from Tim Burton's Batman Returns. Heavy Set, I think this is a great tribute to Harold Ramis. I love Stay Puft. I think Kebbo Trek still has the Stay Puft toy from back in the day. So I think this is a great tribute. And just if I was in L.A. and I'd drive and I'd be seeing Stay Puft, it'd just totally make my day. So let's get your thoughts on this.
Stay Puft is my favorite character for the Ghostbusters. I didn't have one of those Stay Puft when I was a kid, Stay Puft, but I went out and bought two different versions of it, so whenever I have children, I can pass it on to them. And
that's
just
awesome.
Just because of my how much I love Ghostbusters. But Ecto 1, not Echo.
Ecto 1.
And then,
two botches this week. So.
In the article, there's a video, and it's very funny because after we recorded the show last week, I was like, oh, I'm going to throw in Ghostbusters, sit down and watch it. And I grabbed the DVD, and I'm like, no, I have this Blu-ray. I'm going to put in the Blu-ray and watch it on that. And I went through all the special features, and that was one of the special features. And everything they went to update that Ecto-1 and how it looked before, it's just amazing. And Dan Aykroyd, he's in towards the end of the video, and he was really the heart and soul of Ghostbusters. And luckily, he's still with us for right now, but it was just amazing for me to see at this point in time with Harold Ramis passing, thinking how much was probably really behind the scenes and just like him and Ramis writing this particular movie. And I'm looking for more interviews of him talking about it recently as well.
Yeah, the stuff happens a lot, you know, when actors or musicians pass away. One good thing of it that can come with it, it just rejuvenates your passion for whether it was music or movies, and you'll sometimes revisit stuff. And I think that's if you could see any kind of silver lining to it. Fortunately, he passed way too early. Would have been great to have seen him in the third movie. But yeah, if anything, you know, people relive their childhood under Ghostbusters and get that nostalgic feeling back. And, you know, hopefully that pushes on to the third movie and it does well. All right. So those who have been living under a rock, we did have a big night last Sunday. It was the Oscars, hosted by Ellen DeGeneres. So we're going to get into our little Oscar discussion right now. I guess no big surprise on the winners. My pick, Matthew McConaughey, won for Best Actor. Cate Blanchett won for Best Actress, like everybody said she was going to win. Peeta Nyong'o won for Best Supporting Actress, and Jared Leto won for Best Supporting Actor. So two winners in Dallas Buyers Club. Excellent movie. If you guys haven't seen it, I really recommend you check it out. So I guess, guys, not a lot of big spoilers, not a lot of big surprises this weekend.
All the Vegas odd heavies pretty much won, I believe. 12 years for Best Picture, McConaughey, Blanchett, Cuaron. The only one was Cuaron was slightly less heavy than Cate Blanchett for winning. Jared Leto, heavy favorite.
Yeah.
Pito, super heavy favorite. The only one who was slightly ahead of her was Lawrence.
And then, it was funny. Ellen had a joke where she's talking about 12 Years a Slave. Either they win or everybody's racist kind of thing. She actually, let's talk about her quickly if we can. She surprised me a bit. I mean, she was a host that's more on the safe side. You know, I've mentioned in previous podcasts that they've gone the safe route this year because usually they'll do a one-year interval between taking a risk and playing it safe. Billy Crystal was the safe choice. Seth MacFarlane was the risky choice. Ellen was the safe choice. So given that pattern, we're probably going to have a more riskier host next year. But I think for a safe host, I thought she did a pretty good job. One joke I really enjoyed was she was sitting right next to why am I drawing a blank?
Jonah Hill.
Super bad. She was sitting next to Jonah Hill, and she said something about how, you know, Jonah Hill showed something that I haven't seen in a long time. You know, where you got the double entendre there, and referring to Jonah Hill whipping out his cock, not his real cock, but just his cock and Wolf of Wall Street. Just little jokes like that where it was safe, but it was raunchy at the same time. It was smart. And she had a lot of smart humor. I also liked she was very down to earth. Like they did this skit where it wasn't actually a skit. It was real where they just ordered pizza and then they brought the pizza out. And it was like this real delivery guy. And then she's getting tips for the guy after. It was just for that, like it brought the actors back down to earth. They're not these super amazing people, like gods that like we envisioned them as. They're just real people like us. So I thought that was kind of cool. So that was my review of Ellen. You guys want to discuss Ellen's job?
I thought she did a a good job. Like you said, she was obviously a very safe choice, but I think she does well with her topical humor, and she's someone who, like, she's not going to ruffle any feathers. All the audience are going to love her, and I think it showed in some of the skits. Like, I think if you had Ricky Gervais doing the selfie thing that she did, it, you know, people wouldn't have probably participated like they did in that.
Yeah, because she's not very, she won't attack people.
No, that's it. And like, her humor's more very lighthearted and not mean-spirited at all.
Very safe.
And so I think, you know, the A-list actors and actresses respond well to that.
I'm just pissed off that Bad Grandpa didn't win Best Makeup. You can't tell me Dallas Buyers Club, where it didn't look like they put any makeup on any of the actors except for Jared Leto, wins Best Makeup.
It was funny when they announced it. It was this British girl, Jockass presents Bad Grandpa. Just to have that film announced during such a serious show, I thought was kind of cool. Gravity won all the jobber categories. So like the makeup and costume and effects. Gravity won about 12 awards last on Sunday. I guess if any consolation, you guys did a good job. We'll give you all like the jobber categories, and then all the major ones go to all the other movies. So at least they got a little bit
like
of recognition.
The exact same thing that happened to Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, and like the third part of another movie trilogy, and Ben-Hur. Oh, here's the biggest movie of the year. Let's give it everything but actor, actress, and any other stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, Gravity got Best Director, so that's like, that's one of the top awards, so I don't think you can say it was, like, shut out of all the major awards. Like, I would probably put Best Director maybe fourth in the list after Best Actress, Actress, and Picture. So I don't think you can say it got completely shut out. But you know what? It was going to win all the visual awards, and that because it was a visual movie, like special effects. And yeah, Sandra Bullock did a fantastic job, but I don't think it's slighting Gravity in any sense that Cate Blanchett won or that 12 Years a Slave won. I think it won what it should have won. And yeah, it was Gravity was my second favorite movie, but it was because of the visual. So I can see them giving Best Picture to Best Picture to 12 Years
a Slave. Picture
to 12 Years a Slave.
Oh,
I mean,
I swear, Sonny, it was my best years as a slave.
And it's really hard to argue McConaughey and Cate Blanchett winning.
Yeah, Meryl Streep should have won.
Well, you know. But I guess there's a couple things quickly I want to mention. If there was one maybe kind of upset, I would say it was her winning.
As a director.
No, I would say her winning Best Original Screenplay.
I thought that was awesome.
But it was up against, you know, Dallas Buyers Club. It was up against American Hustle. So, like, I'm really happy that it did win, especially the kind of movie it is. But I think we can say it's, you know, at least an upset. And the other thing I just want to mention quickly is I was happy that The Great Gatsby won both Best Production Design and Best Costume Design, because I mentioned it on our year-end special, but I thought like visually it was the most vibrant movie I've ever seen. So I was happy that they were at least able to take away those few awards.
I don't know if you guys noticed that Cuarón got played off. he was up with I don't know if it was for producing or was something, but he came up with some bald British guy, and then he went to talk, and then they played him out, which I thought was kind of funny. If you notice, the speeches didn't drag on. You know, the major categories got a bit more time, of course, because you're not going to snub somebody in 12 Years a Slave, you know what I mean, it'd be over. Or even Jared Leto, when he's talking about AIDS, you're not going to play him off.
Did you hear about, apparently in Russia, Leto's acceptance speech got cut off when he mentioned Ukraine?
I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. In Russia, he was like, not in Russia, but while he was accepting the award on the Russian broadcast, he said the word Ukraine, and the Russian broadcast cut off because of what's happening out there right now.
I don't think that's true.
And there's one more thing I guess we should mention on a funny note, but did you guys see how John Travolta botched the name so badly?
No, no.
Yeah, they're making fun of that on At Midnight.
Because, yeah, what was her name? I don't have it offhand.
I forget the name, but they're like, here's who we really met, and they showed his character from Battlefield Earth.
Because okay, I got it. Her name was Idina Menzel, and he pronounced it Adela Dazeem. Like, how can you mess something up so bad?
Being called an ignorant Caucasian.
And they even have something Travolta-fy your name. So it's kind of like got in some social media stuff, and so that was, I thought it was pretty funny.
Animated movie Frozen. Please welcome the wickedly talented one and only Del Fuzzy.
That's awesome. All right, let's get into the movie review of the week. Carp, you've seen Pompeii, I understand.
I did go see Pompeii.
Why?
For the hell of it. It's one of those popcorn flicks, as to say.
Okay.
Kit Harington, pretty good job. He looked like a human beast. He was so in shape, it was disgusting. Solid opening with the Romans wiping out the Celtic tribes. They basically showed how kind of the Romans took over half the earth at that point, from half the known earth at that point, how they wipe people out. He escaped. He becomes a slave. He becomes a badass slave, starts fighting, gets shipped off to Pompeii for the games, meets an extremely attractive looking Emily Browning. You'd know her as Baby Doll from Sucker Punch. It was thankfully more disaster flick than romance. There was some romance element thrown in. I was scared we were going to get Ladder 49, as I call it, where the trailer's like, oh yeah, look at all these awesome firefights and this and that. And it's a romance movie.
Yeah.
So we didn't get that. There's no real happy ending, which I enjoyed. So I'm not going to say it. I try not to spoil anything for at least a year. It was all right. It's a solid 6 Pompeii mountain explosions out of 10.
Awesome. All right.
Movie Frozen. Please welcome the wickedly talented one and only Adele Dazzy.
She's wickedly talented.
All right, let's get into the weekend box office. Break it down. All right, Kembo Trek, who were the movers and shakers this week?
Coming in at first place with a surprising $29 million.
Are you really surprised at this point? The guy's got a formula. He's got a certain special skill, certain set of skills that works in movie theaters, man. Come on.
The plane has been taken.
The box office has been taken by Liam Neeson.
Like,
this week.
I think like industry experts were expecting maybe closer to $20 million. So $29 million is a pretty solid opening on a $50 million budget. I mean,
especially when it's taken on a plane.
Pretty right? much, but I think it's just like you said. It's showing that he's a draw now as an action star, which, you know, like we said earlier, is awesome because he's in his mid-50s when he became one.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
So I thought that was really cool. Coming in second place with $25 million on a budget of only $22 million is Son of God. I expect this to have some maybe okay legs internationally, so I think they'll be happy with that. The Lego movie was down just 33%, adding $21 million, giving it a very robust $209 million on a $60 million budget. Again, you know, kids movie, I think we're going to see a new franchise starting to pop up there. Coming in fourth place is 3 Days a Kill, adding another $5 million, giving it a
3 Days to Kill.
3 Days to Kill. Sorry.
Hey, everybody's calling me on my botch.
So. Yeah, but mine aren't as funny. Adding $4.9 million, giving it a total of just under $21 million after 2 weeks. Coming in fifth place is The Monuments Men, adding $5 million, giving it a total of $65 million. So, you know, not a big hit, but I think we'll see a slight profit in the end. RoboCop came in at sixth place, adding $4.5 million, giving it just $51 million at the domestic box office, which, while it may seem like it's such a big flop, it has made close to $200 million on the international side. So,
you surprised at that?
Yeah, I mean, why would this movie be doing so much better internationally when it, I don't know, like, what?
Because the name is a draw. The franchise is a draw, I think, internationally.
Maybe. It's just, I don't know. It's, but like, you know, obviously we won't get a sequel made, but, you know, nobody's going to lose their job for this being made.
How well do you think it's going to do in the home market?
Not that well. I mean, I don't think, like, the nostalgia factor will make people that aren't seeing it in the theaters go buy it on the home market. So I think it's going to be, it'll do okay enough to eventually show a profit, but it's not going to set any records by any means. Coming in at seventh place, speaking of disaster, is Pompeii, adding $4.3 million, giving it a total of $17 million after 2 weeks on a budget of $100 million, not counting prints and advertising. So speaking of someone losing their jobs, that might happen.
Yeah.
Coming in at eighth place is Frozen with $3.6 million, giving it $389 million domestic and $1 billion worldwide.
Holy shit.
So I guess I'll throw this to the panel. Did anyone see anything like this happening with Frozen?
I think Heavy was touching on this last week.
But to make a billion on, I figured this movie would make maybe 200 million domestic. And it's really just exploded.
It's that Disney name, man. It's really starting to make a comeback ever since they've been buying stuff like Marvel and Lucasfilms.
Well, I think it's smart that they've, branched out of their, not just their kind of things, their Disney movies. They're getting these other properties because, who wouldn't want Marvel? Who wouldn't want Star
Wars? For the words comfort zone?
Yeah, that's it. They're going out of it, and it's smart, especially with some of the stuff they're buying.
The thing is with Frozen is it's a nice traditional Disney movie, the ones that many people grew up with, but it's not like there was always stories that they use, Rapunzel and The Little Mermaid, that's actually an older story, those old fairy tales. This one was kind of new. If that story is somewhere else, I've never heard of it. And that was one aspect of this is a new Disney adventure. Let's see what it's like. Kids had to be drawn to it because of a lot of the animation, and it's just geared towards them. And you get enough to where kids go see it. They're going to want to drag their parents. They're going to look at it and go, you know what? There's aspects of this that we liked. And it's something that obviously through word of mouth has spread, and this is classical Disney. And really, if you don't have a heart, who doesn't love classical Disney?
One thing interesting to note, maybe you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe this is the first non-Disney Pixar movie in a while that's been such a massive success. I'm trying to think of any off the top of my head, but...
Me neither, I can't.
You mean...
Non-Pixar Disney. You said non-Disney Pixar.
Yeah, I was like...
Sorry. Yeah, you know what I meant.
God, the botches are contagious today.
Yeah, I know, eh? Coming in ninth place, adding $3.3 million, giving it $43 million total is About Last Night. And rounding out the top 10, adding another $3 million, giving it a very robust $127 million is Ride Along. Yeah, my mouth got dry. Shut up. And that rounds out the top 10.
Thank you, Kebo Trek.
Wow, this is just Captain Special podcast night.
I'm keeping them all in, even my bot. I'm keeping everything in. All right.
Let's mention what came in at number 14.
Oh yes, coming in at 14th is the R-rated extended cut of Anchorman.
Wow, it did a lot less than I thought. Didn't I say 30? Wow, I was a bit off.
Did you actually say 30 for that?
I said 30.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I said 30 for the week, but yeah. Wow, okay. It was only in 1,000. How many? It was only
1,000. Still quite a few, though.
It is, yeah. No, it had a per theater average of about 1,300.
But it's weird that they don't consider it part of Anchor. I guess maybe because it's new footage.
It's possible, yeah.
It's not considered part of the Anchorman.
But then again, weren't they there was only a couple showings, so it's well, that's X amount per theater, but that was X amount per showing, too.
I don't think it was marketed well. That's what I think the problem was with that.
But Sorry,
go ahead.
I think for this, you're mainly going to get the hardcores.
Yeah.
It's so soon after the original came out. It's mostly a hardcore market.
All right, let's check out let's check out. We're gonna have an hour long blooper reel.
Let's check out
Bing bang. I'm telling you, it's going to be longer than the podcast. Let's check out the DVD. Let's check out the world of DVDs this week.
DVD release.
So we got a couple. We got 12 Years a Slave. So if you've been following the Oscars and you want to check out 12 Years a Slave, Kebo Trek and Will really, really enjoyed it. Said it was good. The Grand Master as well. And Hunger Games Catching Fire is out on the 7th of March. Carp, usually you interrupt me by saying there's some obscure movie I haven't seen.
I got to interrupt you this time. I was listening to it on another movie podcast, since there's more than just our movie podcast I listen to, but The Last Days of Mars.
No.
Actually, it looks pretty awesome. Group of astronaut explorers succumb one by one to a mysterious and terrifying force while collecting specimens on Mars. Liv Schreiber, as most of us would know him, the guy who played Casey Jones in TMNT, Elias Cotes.
He does other stuff?
Yeah, apparently.
Okay.
It's apparently a zombie flick on Mars, so it looks pretty awesome. And then
fucking zombies.
That piece of shit old boy remake with, what's his name? There, fuck.
Jonah Hill?
No.
No, Joe. What's his name? Jonah.
No.
Jonah Hex.
Yeah, the guy who played Jonah Hex. That old boy remake, which.
The guy who's supposed to be Batman.
Oh my god, that flopped so hard. So, and that's all I think I can interrupt you on, unless see anything else I'd watch. So.
No, let's get into the bin. The bargain. Actually,
if Gallifrey were here, she'd be shitting on you about not mentioning the Doctor Who coming out. Oh, actually, Heavyset should be shitting on you for that.
Doctor Who gives a shit. Heavyset?
Wait a minute, what do you have?
Doctor Who, The Time of the Doctor, is being released on Blu-ray.
They don't have it listed, motherfuckers.
Yeah, you gotta click on View All.
Oh, fuck that.
Yeah, it's so important, it's on the View All page, Carp. Nobody gives a shit.
Can we mention what's coming out in cinemas this week? Which we usually do with the DVDs?
Are we gonna skip that? Are we gonna botch it? Huh?
All right.
Mr. Sankara. Old school Sankara.
Yeah. Oh, I dislocated a finger. I got to take a match off.
All right. Let's check out new movies for this week. 300 Rise of an Empire. What?
Play the trailers.
Can you let me finish the intro, you fucking asshole?
Fucking
OCD king, fuck. ADD queen. Fuck, I can't even. I'm like 300. Play the trailer. Play the fucking trailer. Let's play the trailer. Let's play the trailer and get your thoughts.
It begins as a whisper. A promise. The lightest of breezes dances above the death cries of 300 men. That breeze became a wind. A wind, my brothers, of sacrifice. A wind of freedom. A wind of justice.
What the fuck is this, Game of Thrones?
A wind of vengeance.
Nothing will stop the march of my empire.
I will attack the Greeks. With my entire navy. There will be death and destruction.
Yes, there will be.
All right, so this is 300 on a boat with no big star, Carp. Do you think this is going to do well?
Well, we'll see about how. I mean, the first 300 made a shit ton of money. So if it hasn't died off too much in people's opinions, I mean, Gerard Butler wasn't a big name until 300. So think about
it's
that. True.
It seems like it's the same exact movie, though.
Well, I mean, it's the Battle of Thermopylae, I believe, this time, which it's actually based on, from what people say, is a true story of the Greeks basically saying, fuck you to the Persians, and we're going to fight back. Don't fuck with us. We could kill 10 guys for every one guy you have. So I was a huge fan of the first. I have been a fan of Zack Snyder since the Dawn of the Dead remake. I set up an event for all of us to go see it this weekend, so I'm definitely in for it.
Kebo Trek, is this year or nay for you?
Yeah, I think I'd like to see it. I don't think it's going to do nearly as well as the first one. I can see it maybe making 60% of the box office, but, you know, shut down your brain for a couple hours and enjoy senseless violence. So, yeah, I'd like to see it.
I want to mention, so the first 300 budget is $65 million. Opening weekend in the U.S., $70.8 million.
No, definitely it's gonna make. I don't think it's gonna make in the same numbers, but it, you know, like Kebo Trek says, leave your mind at the door. It's gonna be a big action popcorn flick with a lot of death, a lot of blood, and definitely will appeal to the male audience. I think it's gonna be something to check out. Heavy Set, let's get your thoughts.
Set up a Facebook event for all of us to go.
Well, I don't have you on Facebook.
Bro, you're always welcome, man. If you want to drive up here,
you
no
drive
problem.
That 10 hours up to Montreal, buddy. Have fun.
And get a passport and all that shit. One day.
Have a passport.
But, yeah, this isn't really something for me. I have the first one on DVD, and I've yet to watch it. And the only reason why I bought it was because I was borrowing it off of a friend forever, and I said, you know what, I'm going to give this back to you, and I'm just going to go buy it. And I've still yet to watch it.
Oh, there you go. Oh, this weekend to catch up, you check it out in theaters. All right, let's get into Carp's Bargain.
Whoa. We're not going to talk about Mr. Peabody and Sherman?
No. Carp's Bargain Bin.
I don't know. Actually, no, we should.
It actually looks pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, let me check it out. Hold on.
Mr. Peabody received his doctorate degree, Valedictorian. He pioneered new techniques in alternative energy. And in his spare time, he invented the fist bump, planking,
auto-tune,
the backside ollie, and Zumba. But the only thing harder than being the world's most extraordinary dog...
Sherman, no matter what challenges you face, no matter how far away I might seem...
Bye, Mr. Peabody!
I'm with you.
He's being an ordinary dad.
So who's coming to dinner, Mr. Peabody?
The Petersons.
She hates me.
Make it work. But don't tell her about the way back.
He calls it the way back. It's a time machine.
Sherman, Penny, why are you two dressed like ancient Greeks?
I lost her in ancient Egypt.
And I got engaged to King Tut. Then we ran out of gas.
In ancient Troy.
You used the way back.
Yeah. She was into it.
Oh, my.
You've used time travel improperly. We must rewrite history in order to save the universe.
Ancient Egypt.
Who's that, Mr. Peabody?
King Tut.
My boyfriend.
What? His name rhymes with butt.
Heroes of Greece.
Yeah! Someone left this for us.
A present. Nice. It looks just like our horse.
Should I bring it inside?
It'd be rude not to.
No!
Peabody here. Ah!
I did not see that coming.
This much. You close your
eyes. Nice control.
Thank you.
The most amazing dog in history is taking family time.
Sherman?
I'm good.
To a whole new dimension.
It seems we've ripped a hole in the space-time continuum.
Looks like the past is coming to us.
Penny, my bride!
What?
DreamWorks, Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
Step away from the futuristic orb.
I take home the house from Newman.
Ooh la la!
Take it easy, bro.
In real D and digital 3D.
It's a Dolby meets Bill and Ted. Heavy Set. Let's get your thoughts, man.
The reason why I wanted to talk about this is because this is obviously for anyone. Actually, I can't say obviously. If you don't know, this is one of the shorts that was in Rocky and Bullwinkle. And there's been a track record of these movies that have been from this TV series and how well they've done. I just pulled everything up on Wikipedia on the first two movies. Rocky and Bullwinkle movie and the Dudley Do Right. A budget of $76 million. Box office, $35 million. A budget of $70 million for Dudley Do Right. Box office, $9 million. When they came out with this originally, when I first heard about it, I was like, oh my God, another one? Like, there's this track record. The first two did terrible. This one's going to do that too. Now, after I seen the trailer, I went, this could actually beat out the other two because the bar is that low. So I actually want to see it, though. There's a lot of good actors in there too, doing their voice roles. The dad from what's it,
I keep hearing Joe Swanson.
Modern Family.
Joe from Seinfeld.
Yeah. No, Joe Swanson from Family Guy.
Yeah. Well, he's in Patrick Warburton.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's in a lot of stuff, but Mr. Peabody is the dad from Modern Family. Ty Burrell, I think that's his name. And also another person who is, I'm happy with on this because I love it when he's in anything, Stephen Colbert. So I think just like some of these names alone makes me want to see it. And I just think it's actually going to do so much better than the other two. And it's kind of funny because I don't think if you'd have said this is going to be a movie a couple years ago, I'd have been like, yeah, it's going to suck.
No, it looks really well developed and I see it very much appealing to kids. I think it's going to do well bank as well. Kebo Trek, let's get your thoughts.
Yeah, when I saw the trailer, I thought it looked really good. As everyone knows, I'm not really an animated movie, but I wouldn't mind seeing this, I think.
Carp, let's get your thoughts, man.
I mean, if my nephew were in town this weekend for his spring break, I'd take him to it, but probably not on my own at any point. It does sound like a lot of fun, but I just keep seeing, like, the voices I hear, I see them as the human actors, whereas most animated films I can ignore that part, I guess.
Okay. So you tell me the voices that are in there are too apparent
for me. Yeah, they're too apparent for me. It's a heavy maybe, but most likely doubtful.
I'm wondering what the budget is on it, because on the Wikipedia page for it, they don't have it listed yet. I'm trying to
I would say it's, I'd say it's a couple hundred.
But it already it released last month on February 7th in the UK, and it already has a box office of $39 million.
Oh, that's awesome. For 50 million people, that's really good.
So that's, I mean, that was what it did in the UK. So I don't know what their budget was, but this, I mean, like I said, like just that start alone, probably one of the most profitable movies from this TV show. I think it's crazy.
Yeah. I think DreamWorks spent a lot of money on this. I could see it easily costing 120 to 150. All right. Let's get into the bargain bin for this week.
I'm gonna pop some tags. Only got $20 in my pocket. I'm looking for a come up. This is fucking awesome.
Carp, the Baytown Outlaws. Let's go.
Baytown Outlaws. Movie synopsis from Rotten Tomatoes. After her ex-husband Carlos, played by Billy Bob Thornton, shoots Celeste, played by Eva Longoria, three times in the gut, it's time to play dirty. In the fight for her godson Rob, she hires three outlawed and redneck brothers to bring him back to her. But nothing can be that simple in the South. What begins as a small rescue mission rises to a southern battle royale. This odd team must shoot their way through gorgeous female assassins, Native American hunters, federal agents, and a whole lot of metal coming after them, while protecting Celeste's innocent son. This was fun in the vein of shoot 'em up type action flick. A lot of mindless action, some pretty girls. It felt like a video game made into an action flick. Like, it's almost like Final Fight. There's three brothers, and they go kidnap this kid for this woman to, because they think she's the better person and stuff. Billy Bob Thornton did a good job as a bad guy. The three redneck brothers, they must have found the perfect rednecks to hire these guys. They played redneck to a key. The, like, largest, angriest-looking pro wrestling brother they had. I'm assuming he's mostly a stunt actor because he used a speaking spell to speak on the screen, which was actually kind of amusing. The gorgeous female assassins are like kind of like bordello type girls. The lead one is Zoe Bell. Anybody who knows Kill Bill would know her as Uma Thurman's stunt double. She was also in Death Proof. She looked great in it. It was a lot of action fun. It's only 19% from the critics on Rotten Tomatoes, but the audience is a lot higher, and I'm a lot higher with this. For me, it's 7 sexy assassins out of 10.
All right, awesome. Let's close the show on that note. Get your plugs, final thoughts. Start with Heavy Set.
You know what? I'm not going to go the www.kfabesports.com route. I'm actually going to throw out a plug. I don't know if you guys get it in Canada. Do you guys get the Today Show, the American version?
Yeah, we get NBC.
Okay. This next Monday coming up, the 10th, I believe it is, the 10 o'clock Eastern hour, my girlfriend is going to be on.
Oh, nice.
I don't really talk about my girlfriend a lot. I mean, I love her and everything, but it's kind of like I keep her away from these other worlds. But I mean, if you anybody who's been on my Facebook, you'll see pictures over there. But she actually, over the past couple of years, has lost 130 pounds all on her own. And somehow this got back to NBC, and they have this segment once a month called the Joy Fit Club. And she has been asked to come on. She will be on Monday. So set your DVRs in. I mean, the video might be online later, but I know we got our DVR set here. I'm going to be on the road during that time, but just something to throw out there, a little bit of behind the curtain with me, if you will.
Yeah, that's fantastic, man. Tyler, I said congratulations. Carp, let's get your plugs, final thoughts.
As always, we're looking for new members on StateWars.com. The next UFC pay-per-view will be up next week. And get ready for the WrestleMania pay-per-view. There will be a prize for the winner of that pay-per-view.
Kev Botrek, final thoughts.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Not surprised. All right, so for Heavy Set, Kev Botrek, Carp, this is Old School. Thank you very much for listening.
Please welcome the wickedly talented one and only Adele Dazeem.
What's up? It is Heavy Set, and I'm here to tell you about Kayfabe Sports Radio, the home of the Ohio Indie Report and NFL Easy Picks. On the Ohio Indie Report, I break down what's going on in the Cleveland scene of independent wrestling, from AIW to Prime Wrestling, and some of the little organizations in between that I can attend. And if you also like NFL football, be sure to check out NFL Easy Picks, hosted by myself and my good friend Joe Bennett, as we break down and talk about what is going on in football, and we make our picks on the coming week's games. And all this can be found at www.kfabesports.com. You can also find us on iTunes by searching Kayfabe Sports Radio. And while you're at kfabesports.com, be sure to check out the links for Kayfabe Sports Radio, Ohio Indie Report, and NFL Easy Picks on Facebook and Twitter. So for now, be sure to check out the Ohio Indie Report and NFL Easy Picks on Kayfabe Sports Radio, where it's all a work.
Slamming your brain through a table of wrestling knowledge.
Oh my God, what's gonna happen?
News and rumors. The Spanish Announce Table.
TrendingTopicsNetwork.com.
It's probably, she's like this generation's version of Rosie O'Donnell. I don't mean because she's gay and she hosts a talk show, but seriously, if
and we've got Carp.
Yo, baby, you ever had your asshole licked by a fat man in an overcoat? Yeah.
Heavy Set, where the fuck are you?
Oh, sorry, I thought I was on mute.
That was Kevin blowing loads into his own face.
Yeah, yeah, that sounded like a load.
Resident Evil. Isn't he a little goosey?